Here we are on the 50,000-watt blowtorch of commercial radio here in the Midwest, News Talk 1120, KMOX. And it may seem like the big guy jumping on the little guy to get into this next topic, but I've got to because the little guy is not all that little. There is a lot of talk on Capitol Hill these days about public broadcasting in America, PBS, NPR, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and whether they should be getting the funding that they want. Whenever politicians talk about funding, what they're really talking about are your tax dollars and mine. Here to join me to talk about this is Matt Welsh, who's the media columnist for Reason Magazine. Hello, Matt.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm doing just fine. The basis of this argument in Washington is political. The conservative right doesn't like some of the stuff that's on NPR and especially on PBS. They want there to be more balance in there. I hate that word, balance. I always say that my show is fair but unbalanced because I do have a bias, and I don't think there's anything wrong with bias. I'm one of the few people who will admit to first-person bias. Everybody else says the word bias. They always mean it in the third person. But I admit to having a bias and an agenda every day I come in here because I'm an opinionated talk show host, and I don't think there's a problem with that. But what bothers me more, and this is what I wanted you to comment on, is the whole notion of public funding, taxpayer dollars, government funding of broadcasting of any kind. What are your thoughts on that?
It's a strange and bizarre anachronism from a time that we no longer live in, frankly. And the original idea of funding for public broadcasting was when there was limited number of outlets on the commercial dial. There's only three networks, only maybe a half an hour or an hour for news every evening. And people wanted to make sure that quote-unquote quality broadcasting was out there for us unwashed plebes. And now we live in this culture of incredible plentitude, you know, thanks in part because we've gotten rid of some other anachronistic ideas like the Fairness Doctrine, which up until 1987 prevented people like you from making a living, basically. Mm-hmm. But now we've seen this great proliferation of talk radio, of cable news, of high-quality documentary programming like, you know, the Animal Planet and the History Channel and all these kinds of things. So why do we need to spend, you know, another $250 million of our tax money on broadcasting? It's beyond me, and the thing that's probably the most disappointing and yet the most predictable about it is that the conversation in Washington isn't even really about defunding public broadcasting. That is still seen as some kind of crazy extreme idea. It's more about how Republicans can get more influence on public broadcasting, which they've done in the form of the new chairman of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, Ken Tomlinson, who's a Republican, and then how liberal and progressive groups can complain about it and launch investigative hearings to protest that he's been larding the joint up with more Republicans. You know, it wasn't that long ago that the Newt Gingrich class of revolutionary congressmen were talking about getting rid of state funding for the arts and public broadcasting and things. And now, you know, they just want to make sure that their voice is as loud as the liberals. I say get rid of it altogether. It's not as if we're going to suffer from a lack of available high-quality documentary programming.
Yeah, and I don't think that PBS and NPR would go away. After all, they only get 15 to 20% of their funding. And I say only, they would say, that would seem a huge number to them. It seems a small number to me. 15 to 20% of their funding from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, which is where tax dollars come in here. But every time this conversation comes around, I know the very first complaint I'm going to hear from somebody is, you want to cancel Sesame Street.
How much money does Sesame Street make every year in just merchandising dollars for little Kermits and Cookie Monsters? You know, I think it's in the tens and scores and maybe even hundreds of millions of dollars. Who is not going to line up to try to buy the rights to broadcast Sesame Street? It's a ridiculous argument. It's a no-brainer. And it's only a sign of how debased we've allowed ourselves to become at the hands of major political parties that what we're talking about, which is commonsensical, you know, why is my tax money going to hire journalists who are making $300,000 a year at NPR? I want some of that money, you know. I want that salary. But it's a sign of the debasement that is seen as some kind of crazy extreme position.
This also, for me, comes down to the matter of having politicians sticking their noses into content of any kind. You know, we went through this over the last couple of years because of Janet Jackson and her nipple at the Super Bowl and the whole indecency matter and Congress and the FCC going crazy over that. And this seems to me to come out of the same kettle. Am I wrong?
I don't think you are. I mean, I believe the old saw goes, Congress shall pass no law infringing on the freedom of speech and the press, right?
Yep.
That notion, in my view, in letter and also spirit, has been violated repeatedly across a number of fronts. I think the whole setup of the FCC to begin with, and the notion that they need to police the content of, you know, not just our terrestrial broadcast airways, but even cable TV they're trying to stick their nose into, and perhaps even the internet and weblogs and things like that. And campaign finance reform also falls under this rubric, although many people have supported it over the years, but it basically tells you what you can and can't say in the run-up to the election. And this is all part of it. It's instructive that the new Republican, the controversial, the chair of the Corporation Public Broadcasting, he comes from the Voice of America, which is our sort of official propaganda. Just the other day, there's sort of a humorous story, if you have a dark sense of humor, I guess. The Voice of America, which has, by the way, 1,400 employees, think about that for a second, they decided to outsource 8 jobs to Hong Kong, some kind of midnight shift. This is what we're going to be broadcasting to God knows where. We're going to have 8 employees in Hong Kong. 14 Democratic senators, including John Kerry, wrote a howling note of protest saying at the same time that we can't do this because it's very important to ensure the high quality of balanced programming, and then also that obviously those darn foreigners can't be trusted to give balanced programming of the kind that we need. It's ridiculous. Anytime you get politicians in the business of judging content, judging who is fair and balanced and who isn't, that's just a recipe for disaster. We do fine on our own. Let us continue doing fine on our own.
All right. Another argument that you always hear against having cutbacks in this, or what I guess you're advocating here, which is absolutely no government funding of public broadcasting, is, look, you know, especially the public TV stations, they are offering programming that people can't find anywhere else. Is that true?
I really don't think so. You know, I live here in Los Angeles, in Hollywood, basically, and I run into a lot of, let's say, independent documentary filmmakers, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm a member of the Los Angeles Press Club, and we just had a screening for this great documentary called Press Pass to the World. I'm not just giving it a plug, but just as an example. And it's about journalists working abroad and the difficulties they face. It was a very interesting documentary showing people's lives in Cuba and elsewhere. And I talked to the guy afterwards and said, you know, oh, it's, how is it to try to produce and distribute documentaries? Because for time immemorial, documentary filmmakers have complained about a lack of funding and a lack of outlets. And he says it's a golden era. It's never been better than it is now because of all the proliferation of cable channels and because the price of technology has gone down so dramatically. You know, people can just get a digital camera, go around the world and make anything they want and have a great success. And that included in that are people with the strong political views of the left and the right. You know, the success of people like Michael Moore and of MoveOn.org. And then on the right of, people who were excited about the Swift Boat controversy, there's plenty of outlets for all kinds of documentary filmmaking, political filmmaking, and content, and there's no reason that our money needs to be spent on it.
I always find the argument that this is programming you can't get anywhere else to be a slightly elitist argument also. You know, it's people who want to see more classical music or more opera or more dance or whatever it is on television, and I have nothing against any of those things except that I'm not a particular fan of them, and I believe in the marketplace in America. There are places where you can go on television and find those things. Many of them, of course, are pay television. You know, you got to get cable TV if you want to have these options. But, you know, when the symphony here in St. Louis has a financial problem, they don't think of doing what, say a major rock and roll band that's on tour is doing and charging $150 a ticket to subsidize the Rolling Stones tour or you know, whoever it is who's coming around. You want to go and experience these things, maybe you have to make that financial sacrifice. On the other hand, And here I'll play a little bit of devil's advocate. Isn't it a good thing to say we can expose kids to these different forms of art?
Well, who says that we can't expose kids to these different forms of art? America is, thanks to all of our riches, we give more money to support the arts privately than probably any nation in the world, you know. And in where I live, you can go to see a terrific opera, a terrific symphony in the Disney Concert Hall designed by Frank Gehry. And this money came mostly not from the state or the city or anything like that, but from wealthy local philanthropists, people who made their money in the supermarket business or real estate, and they wanted to give back to the community. And one of the ways, classically, that people have given back to the community is to support fine arts. That is part of the market. That's, I think, something that gets lost in all of this. People say, oh, if you're going to subject, you know, classical music to the whims of the market, you know, the rapacious beast of the market, it's going to go away. Well, no, it's not. You know, there's in universities everywhere there are symphonies. My sister plays piano in one of them. They do fine. They get funding from philanthropists, from endowments. And, you know, if I'm not mistaken, National Public Radio just received some ungodly sum of money, endowment from the Annenberg Foundation, something like $100 million, was it $1 billion, I forget what, and they're trying to figure out how to spend it. Same thing with, if you recall the story from Poetry Magazine, to talk about another art form that people always claim is underfunded. I believe Poetry Magazine got something like a $100 million endowment. Here, you know, how in heck can you possibly even spend that? And yet, in Los Angeles, where I live, the local public transit system actually spends my money to pay for poets to give poetry readings on Fridays in the metro so that people can, I don't know, feel artistic while they're going downtown. This art is going to happen anyways. The need to, the desire to experience and especially also to create art is always going to be there with us. It doesn't need the government's interference to get involved. And when the government does get involved, it just opens up an unseemly can of worms that ends up wasting all of our money.
Do you think that if PBS and NPR and all the local public TV and radio stations around the country were to be completely defunded by the government so that no tax dollars were going there, the public and the private sectors would step up and pick up that funding gap?
Oh, my God. Imagine for a second the incredible fundraising drive it would be for these people. They would say, you know, the evil, soul-sucking privateers out there are jeopardizing our very existence, and then they would get on the airwaves that we've allowed them to use for free and given them money to work with to have the world's biggest fundraiser. I think it would be a godsend, a boon to them. They would probably get more money than they would have in the first place, and the only thing that they would worry about is that they would be sort of shooting their wad in terms of crisis fundraising. You know, they have a great platform from which right now to establish funding. They have nice built-in audiences depending on where you go. In LA, we have 4 terrific public broadcast stations. I listen to them all the time. I'm a supporter of one of them. They can use that platform to get more money, and I think they should.
Yeah. NPR actually does have a lot of listeners in most major cities in America. They do very, very well competitively. Of course, the fact that they don't have to play commercials is a factor there. Not that commercials are bad. They pay my salary, but we do know that that's a factor in listenership and certainly is there. But my final question for you is this. How much of a threat is this really? Because public TV in particular is really playing this up as save Clifford the big red dog. They had him on Capitol Hill yesterday. Save Elmo. Save, you know, all these other things that would really appeal to parents and the heart of this country. Is there a chance that this is going to be a real problem for public broadcasting of all kinds in this country?
If only we were so lucky. I just don't have faith in any major political party that once it gets power, that it'll pass up the temptation to mess around with the content of the public airwaves. You know, like many things else in the Gingrich Revolution, it was quickly forgotten once they actually had power and now control all 3 branches of government, essentially. The people who are really advocating for defunding at this point are those of us who are outside of the traditional party system. You know, our voices don't get a seat at the table. We don't get to appoint a governor to the Corporation for Public Broadcasting enough already. You know, it's like a more of a second world country. You know, every time there's a new government in, then everyone from the radios and TVs gets fired, and the new ones are put into place. It's kind of unseemly. It's not what America should be doing.
Yeah, keeping it out of the whims of politicians. Well, frankly, in my world, keeping everything out of the whims of politicians is a pretty good idea. Matt, I appreciate your time today. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for having me.
Matt Welsh, media columnist for Reason Magazine here on The Paul Harris Show. When we come back from a break, the other side of the argument from James Baum, who's the president of KETC Channel 9 here in St. Louis. This is News Talk 1120 KMOX. All right, so we heard from Matt Welsh, the media columnist for Reason Magazine, about why he doesn't think that the government should be funding public broadcasting in this country. Government funding, of course, really means your tax dollar and mine. Here now a guy who I'm guessing has an opposite viewpoint, James Baum, who's the president of KETC Channel 9. James, welcome to the show.
Hey, Paul, how are you?
I'm doing just fine. So how come you need my tax dollars to keep running?
Well, for more than 30 years, public broadcasting has relied on a federal subsidy, and this is a portion of our budget. It's not. I mean, some people have the misconception that it's a very large portion. It's not. It's about 10 to 12% of our total budget, but we've relied on that federal subsidy to help us purchase and produce the programs that our viewers have come to depend on, programs like Sesame Street and like Clifford and like Big Bird. And so those are some of the things we do with the tax dollars that we spend.
But you wouldn't lose Sesame Street and Clifford and Arthur if you had 10% less funding, would you?
Well, we could, because it's actually deeper than that. Now, I'm talking about only 10% of our operating budget for the coming year is federal funding. But you look at the overall cuts that were proposed by the House, we're talking about a 45% cut, because it cuts other programs besides the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. It cuts funding that helps us purchase equipment. It certainly cuts money that goes directly to program producers. And when I say that, I'm talking about people who do produce programs like Masterpiece Theater, like Nova, like Frontline, the News Hour, et cetera. So, yes, this would have a devastating impact on public broadcasting.
You don't believe, as Matt thinks, that public and private funding would come fill that gap?
You know, I would love to be able to say that would be the case, but I don't think that's going to happen immediately. I mean, look at the current climate that we're in. Corporate support, while it's good, it's not as strong as we would like for it to be. Our membership is more than 50% of our budget, and it's strong. But we rely on the federal money. There's no question that this would have a severe impact on public broadcasting.
But once you let that money in the door, aren't you also letting the politicians who give you that money come in the door as well, and then they stick their nose into the content like they're doing now?
Well, you know, Paul, I'd like to be able to say, no, that's not true, but it obviously has become true. Now, the way the Corporation for Public Broadcasting was set up, it was set up to be a heat shield to keep us at arm's length from our funding sources, like the federal government. And for many, many years, it's operated that way. It's only within the past few months that we've seen that heat shield be stripped away because of a particular political agenda, and now we're feeling some of the effects of this. There's no question that this is hurting us.
And that leaves you at the whims of the political agenda. You know, you have one party that's in office, they decide to take it one way, then maybe the other party, if they can get their act together, takes control and takes it back the other way, and you end up being a pendulum, and you don't quite know what you're doing. Wouldn't it be nicer if your mission could be, you know what, we're going to put on the best programming we can afford to put on, and hope that people like it, and if they do like it, they'll support us, and companies will support us, and we'll be able to continue presenting this. And if not, well, that's the marketplace in America.
Well, that's easy to say. It just it doesn't work that way in reality, because we are under a particular mandate from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. We do depend on PBS, and PBS depends on some federal funding. There's just no getting around it at this point in time. But I understand what you're saying, and yes, I would very much like to be completely and totally independent, and we try to operate that way. However, we are also in a world of realities, and certainly we do have to pay attention to what's happening in Washington. But let me say this, we're working very hard as a system to try to push back from where CPB, the board of CPB, appears to be pushing us at this point. We are certainly not going to go quietly. We are going to push back, and we're going to declare our independence at every opportunity.
I know that there are non-commercial radio stations, not NPR stations, but non-commercial stations on the air that are run as community radio stations, and they run on a shoestring budget, and they get all the money that they need from either the public or, you know, through donations or private underwriting and endowments and that sort of thing. Is there such a thing as a completely independent public TV station in this country?
Well, perhaps the closest thing would be cable access, but even that's subsidized by the cable commissions, the cable franchises, and franchisees. So I'm not aware of any stations, unless they're really, really small, non-PBS stations that would be considered to be completely independent on the public side.
All right, now I got to put you on the spot here, James, and I appreciate the fact that you're on with me taking my questions on this, but I do have to put you on the spot. I'm not a big Channel 9 watcher. I watch Scientific American. I like that show. There's been some great stuff on Nova. I like Frontline, one of the best documentary series on TV. But I was looking at your schedule for this week, and I got to tell you, I don't think that my tax dollars need to go to support Antique Roadshow or an Andy Williams concert or a John Denver concert, or frankly, Charlie Rose and Tavis Smiley and Susie Orman and Dr. Wayne Dyer. These are things that, you know, if they weren't on TV, to me, it wouldn't be a horrible thing. And if the people did want to see those things, then let them cough up a few extra dollars to pay to get cable and do it themselves, just like the rest of television has to be. You know, if I don't like all the reality shows or the horrible sitcoms that are on the main networks, I can get cable and I can watch FX or HBO or many of these other choices. Why do I need to kick in money to a pot that's going to present programming that, frankly, serves me no purpose?
Well, I guess that's what makes horses run. There are people who do want to watch Antiques Roadshow. In fact, it's one of our most popular programs on public television. It consistently pulls good ratings, and again, it's just one of our most popular programs. Now, the other programs you mentioned, Andy Williams and John Denver, those were not paid for from Channel 9's federal funding. Those were programs we purchased outside, and those are fundraising programs. Those are pledge programs. Mm-hmm. Those are not the core programs that you see here on public TV. The programs we're talking about with federal subsidy include programs like the News Hour, Masterpiece Theater, Mystery, et cetera, and particularly our children's programs, and that's something we haven't really talked about. We consistently have the very best children's programs on television, and we consistently are able to point to them and say this is what's helping educate our children, and those programs are assisted by federal funding.
Absolutely. And you know what? I wish there were some way to figure it out so that we could underwrite the educational children's programming, but not have to pay for Charlie Rose. You know, again, that's just me. And speaking of the children's programming, Matt brought this up, and I had written it down too, so we got two questions here on the same topic here, which is, where does all that merchandising money go? You know, all that Muppet money. Every time a kid goes and buys an Elmo doll or a Big Bird picture or T-shirt or whatever it is, how come that billions of dollars isn't being funneled back to you guys?
You know, that's a question we've asked here for years, and the answer is not simple, but let me try to give it to you in a 20-second soundbite here. We don't own the licensing rights, and as you know, in broadcasting, it's all about rights. We don't own the licensing rights to programs because we have limited funding. We're able to purchase the programs, but we're not able to purchase the licensing rights that go with them, the back-end rights, if you will. So therefore, we don't share or we haven't shared over the years with all of the gains from the licensing, the Big Bird dolls and all of that sort of thing. We don't get money for that. However, we're doing a much better job now of trying to negotiate a better rights deal on the front end when we do put a new program like Clifford on the air or like Buster. And so, yes, it's something we're very aware of, and no, we haven't done a very good job of that, and primarily it's just because of limited resources.
Yeah, I bet there's more money going into the Children's Television Workshop for that stuff than is coming out of Washington to you guys. Somebody did need to make a better deal before they signed those pieces of paper and gave those all the exposure that they've had for decades now on public broadcasting.
Well, I wish I could argue with you, but I can't. I think you're right.
James, I appreciate you coming on today. Thank you very much.
Paul, thank you.
James Baum is the president of KETC Channel 9 here on the Paul Harris Show on News Talk 1120 KMOX. When we come back, we'll get to your phone calls. 314-436-7900 is my number. I almost gave out his number. I was going to almost give you the pledge number for Channel 9. No, 314-43. He would have loved that, wouldn't he? Now, our number here for your calls is 314-436-7900. The toll-free number is 800-925-1120. It's your tax dollars at work here, and we're not talking about the political agenda angle on this, just the question of whether we should be supporting this sort of stuff with our tax money. This is the Paul Harris Show on KMOX.